Hi, this is Brother Peter Diamond, and I'm going to be talking a little bit about Pope St. Pius V. Pope St. Pius V is one of the strongest Catholic popes in all of history. He is one of only two popes who have been canonized in the last 500 years. Pope St. Pius V reigned from 1566 to 1572. In covering some of the more interesting facts and quotes pertaining to his life in this audio program, I'm going to be using a number of sources, one of which is the book St. Pius V by Robin Anderson, a small yellow book, but one which is very interesting, and also the extensive facts covered about Pope St. Pius V by Dr. Ludwig Pasteur in his work History of the Popes. When Pope St. Pius V was elected, the Church had gone through a period where you had some more worldly popes during the Middle Ages. They held true to Catholic doctrine, but some of them were not as spiritually centered as they should have been. So Pope St. Pius V, by contrast, was considered quite rigorous, and he actually made the comment after being elected that, quote, with the help of God, he hoped to govern in such a way that the grief felt at his death would be greater than that which was felt at his election. His meaning was that he would put an end to some of the things which had been tolerated but should not have been. Prior to becoming Pope, St. Pius V had worked significantly with the Inquisition, the congregation of the Church dealing with the faith and investigating those who deviated from the faith. This is interesting because the Inquisition and the concept of it has come under criticism not only by non-Catholics but also liberals and heretics who consider themselves Catholics. So the fact that one of our greatest popes in history had worked extensively and enthusiastically in the Inquisition should remind us that the Inquisition itself is not something that's against the Christian or Catholic faith, but a necessary congregation which oversaw and safeguarded the integrity of the faith, even if some of the people who had been involved with it at times did not fulfill that work the way they should have. It's also interesting that Pope St. Pius V was considered a kindred spirit with Pope Paul IV. Those who study papal history know that Pope Paul IV was one of the most aggressive and vigorous popes against heresy in the whole history of the Church. So this just gives us a little bit of insight into how Pope St. Pius V viewed heresy and viewed deviation from the faith. It was Pope Paul IV, in fact, who made Pope St. Pius V a cardinal. Pope St. Pius V was a very spiritually devoted pope. He had a very strong prayer life, spent much time in prayer, was considered to be very ascetical and penitential. A quote which I found interesting comes from Ludwig Pasteur, History of the Popes, Volume 17, page 64. And it says, quote, Pius V did not allow himself to be led away by first impressions, but once he had formed a definite opinion on any subject, it was almost impossible to shake him. He was quicker to form a bad opinion of anyone than a good one, especially in the case of people he did not know well, end quote. I found this interesting. Pius V was quicker to form a bad opinion of people than a good one. I find this interesting because when you are involved in teaching the faith or in combating those who deny the faith, there are so many people out there who are deviating from the faith and who are not holding surely to the rule of faith that you will find yourself, as a necessity, forming a bad opinion about most people based on the deviation from the faith which they exhibit. And so some people have criticized those who are quick to denounce those who deviate from the faith when it's clear that they're aware of the thing that they're rejecting, but still rejecting it or contradicting it. They've denounced us and others for denouncing those people as uncharitable. Well, they would be saying the same thing about Pope St. Pius V, because when he was dealing with these type of issues, he saw the same type of thing. And so had to form a bad opinion about many, many people, often quickly. Another quote that's interesting from the life of St. Pius V concerns his insistence on absolute truthfulness. This is from page 63 of Pastor. Quote, "Pius V's strictness in all that concerned reform, the administration of justice, and the Inquisition recalled the days of Paul IV. Himself as pious as he was humble, and as grave as he was severe, Pius V expected much from others. Above all, he insisted on absolute truthfulness. The man who had once told him a lie lost his favor forever." End quote. That's very interesting. Immediately after his election as Pope, he began to reform some of the policies. His first act as Pope was to dismiss the court jester. Quote, "His first act after his coronation, and one which is in itself a sign of his strict views, was to give orders for the dismissal from the Vatican of Dr. Buccia, the court jester of Pius IV. In 1567, the custom of celebrating the anniversary of the coronation, that is, the coronation of the Pope, by a state banquet was abolished, and the money which would have been spent was distributed to the poor." Another interesting thing which we learn from the life of St. Pius V is that he looked at his duty as Pope first from a spiritual standpoint, and secondly from any other standpoint. The fact is that during the Middle Ages, popes were so involved with kings and temporal rulers and solving problems of war and things of a secular nature that at times they started to become more of diplomats than priests and popes. They remained Catholics, of course, but they tended to deal with these problems as another head of state rather than someone who's looking to what God wants first and foremost and what is in the best interests of the spiritual good of souls and the spiritual affairs of the church. Pius V's outlook was totally spiritual. This is a quote from page 79 of the volume of Pastor. Quote, "At the beginning of his pontificate, Pius V understood in such a literal sense the protection which our Lord had promised to his vicar on earth that he would have liked to have done away with all human means of defense. Her arms were prayer and fasting, tears and the Holy Scriptures, and he would prefer to follow in the footsteps of those popes who had defended the dignity of the Holy See by spiritual arms." End quote. Another thing we see in the life of St. Pius V is his detachment from relatives. We see this in all of the saints' lives. This is not to suggest that people should not care for their relatives, of course, but rather the truth of Matthew chapter 10, verses 34 and following, where Jesus says, "If any man loves his father, mother, sister, brother, etc., more than me, he is not worthy of me." That is, if any member of one's family starts to hurt his spiritual welfare or cause him to not accomplish what God wants him to accomplish, then that person must be discarded or ignored. And during the Middle Ages, there was definitely a problem with nepotism, favoring one's relatives and all kinds of things. Well, St. Pius V did not have that problem. On page 85, we read about when Pope St. Pius V caught his nephew was caught in immorality. Quote, "The Pope had him called before a civil court, and then, without looking at his nephew, caused his sentence to be read aloud, which ran as follows. Paolo Ghisleri is to forfeit all his goods and revenues, and under pain of death is to leave the Vatican within 2 days." End quote. So he banished his nephew from the Vatican after his nephew had been caught in immorality. Speaking of immorality, Pius V issued severe measures against those who had been caught in immorality. Here's a quote about Pope St. Pius V's actions against immorality from page 86. Quote, "The Romans had many other opportunities of realizing with what ruthless severity Pius V punished moral offenses. As early as January 19, 1566, there was the publication of a stern edict against the immorality prevalent in Rome. At the consistory of January 23rd, the Pope spoke not only of the need of reform among the clergy, but also of his intention of taking action against blasphemy and concubinage. To give effect to this intention, he issued on April 1, 1566, an edict which imposed the severest penalties for the disturbance of divine worship, the profanation of Sundays and festivals, simony, blasphemy, sodomy, and concubinage. End quote. So, for instance, he would have taken action against people who did unnecessary work on Sundays, etc. People need to know, because many have not been preached to about this matter, that servile works and things of that nature are not to be done on Sundays. You should not mow your lawn on Sundays, things like that. The quote goes on to say, quote, in July 1566, an ordinance was issued for the limitation of luxury in dress and of excessive lavishness in banquets, which was followed in October 1566 by another edict concerning dress. This is very interesting. It goes on to talk about pomp in marriages. Quote, in June 1567, there came a special law against excessive pomp at marriages and the ruinous inflation of marriage dowries and settlements. End quote. So we can see what kind of Pope St. Pius V was. This is how a truly Catholic and a very strong Pope looked at these things and acted upon them. Speaking of his actions against pomp at marriages, it always irked me the thought of some of these modern-day marriages, even among those who claim to be Catholic, which are so lavish and wasteful. It's just utterly ridiculous. The importance and the uniqueness of that marriage ceremony should be the exchanging of the sacrament, not this incredible waste of money on a celebration which will be over with in a few hours. It's really outrageous. And at many of these events, there's immorality, often drunkenness, and other things which are horrible. In fact, it's interesting because one priest who had spoken with Brother Michael about this priest is actually a heretic, but many years ago, he had never performed a marriage ceremony for supposed traditional Catholics before, but agreed to do it. And after doing it, he said that it was one of the worst experiences he's had and that he'd never do one again, simply because of the way that these supposed traditional Catholics and their supposed friends treated the ceremony, the way they came to the ceremony, the way they acted, and he said it was just horrible. Pius V also took action against prostitutes and adulterers. This is from page 90 of Pastors, volume 17. The volume I've been quoting from, quote, an edict published on St. Mary Magdalene's Day, July 22, 1566, ordered that the more notorious prostitutes were to be expelled from Rome within 6 days, and within a further period from the Papal States, unless they preferred to marry or enter the convent. This edict caused great anxiety in Rome. Many complained that such rigor would depopulate the city, and that many tradesmen who had supplied goods to these people on credit would suffer seriously. This just shows us how bad the problem of immorality was. This continues on page 91. Pius V remained inexorable on the subject of expulsion of the more notorious courtesans. By August 10th, most of them had already left Rome, and others were preparing to do so, though many had been converted. The fact that some of those who had been expelled had been killed by highwaymen, told in favor of those who were still in Rome. These were accordingly not expelled, but had to put a stop to their public disorders, and a segregated quarter was assigned to them, near the Ripetta, which they were not to leave either by day or night under pain of a public whipping. By this severity, Pius V hoped to induce them either to leave Rome or to be converted. For this purpose, special sermons were arranged for them, as was also done in the case of the Jews. On September 5, 1566, a fresh order for the expulsion of those who were quite incorrigible was issued. How deep-seated this evil was is clear from the fact that during the whole of his reign, Pius V was forced to take action against it year after year. Prostitutes who had left their quarters were constantly whipped and others expelled. A proof of the anxiety which the Pope felt for the conversion of these fallen women is to be found in the fact that in August 1567, he persuaded 6 elderly ladies to devote themselves to this difficult task. It goes on to talk about how, quote, the Pope watched over the sanctity of family life very carefully, and nothing escaped his attention. Thus he forbade young girls from being employed as servants, while an edict published in the autumn of 1566 forbade under severe penalties all Romans who had houses of their own to frequent taverns. The many cases of adultery which occurred in Rome filled Pius V with indescribable grief and ever-increasing indignation. From the beginning of his reign, he did all he could to bring about a change in this respect. A report of August 25, 1568 states, quote, "The threat of the death penalty for adultery is expected, so that everyone will either have to become moral or leave the city. People were constantly imprisoned without consideration of rank." In September 1568, a noble Roman lady who had been found guilty of adultery was imprisoned for life. One of the richest and most respected bankers in Rome, the Sienese di Vecchi, having been convicted of adultery, was publicly whipped in December 1568, quote, "as a salutary example for the nobles." In the following year, it was rumored that the Pope intended to expel from Rome all married women who fell into this sin, and this penalty was often inflicted after the culprit had been whipped for the first offense. In June 1570, the governor of Rome had great difficulty in dissuading the Pope from inflicting the death penalty for adultery, but at length Pius V agreed that adulterers should be punished by whipping, imprisonment, or banishment. On page 95, Pastor goes on to explain that Pius V's strictness was such that the prisons were overcrowded. And on page 97, we read about the description of Rome, which we hear about often in connection with Pius V, that he turned Rome into a monastery. Quote, "Under the strict regime which had now been set on foot, the Eternal City began to assume that peculiar character which has been given the name of the worldwide monastery." Pius V so opposed heresy and so recognized how evil it is and how much damage it does to souls that we read on page 103, quote, "When the Pope learned that Faenza was full of heretics, he thought of proceeding to the very limits of severity. He wished to destroy the city and transfer the inhabitants to some other place." End quote. Pius V also made sure that priests said Mass three times in the week, because at that time many priests had fallen out of saying Mass regularly. He had all who heard confessions examined to make sure that those who were hearing confessions were doctrinally and morally sound. He, of course, published the bull Quo Primum, which restored the Roman rite and made it binding. He declared that questions of faith must take precedence over all other business, since the faith is the substance and groundwork of Christianity, and he stated in a solemn constitution that it would be his first care to see that heresies, false doctrines, and errors were removed and banished as far away as possible, for that only thus could security and peace be restored to the Church." End quote. That's from page 290 and 291 of the volume I'm quoting from. Here's a quote from page 292, which really captures how diametrically opposed a pope like St. Pius V, a very strong Catholic pope, is to the Vatican II anti-popes. Quote, "From the first, no one expected anything else from Pius V. The new pope," so wrote Cardinal Sicida in announcing the election to the Republic of Genoa, "will be a distinguished pastor who will, above all things, set his heel upon the heretics and the enemies of the faith." End quote. It's also interesting, and this was something I did not know until reading this volume, and I've not seen anyone else who has quoted the bull of Pope Paul IV, Cum Ex Apostolatus Officio. That's the bull that declares that heretics cannot be elected pope. This bull was actually renewed by Pope St. Pius V. This is from page 295 of Pastor. Quote, "The Pope renews the bull of Paul IV of February 15, 1558 against heretics and schismatics." Pastor gives the date of the bull as 1558, even though it's also given as 1559. Pastor also has a note to another volume of his work in which he discusses this bull more extensively. So there's no doubt that Pastor is pointing out that Pope St. Pius V put his authority behind the bull of Pope Paul IV, Cum ex apostolatis officio, which declared that the election of a heretic to the papacy would be invalid. We thought that this fact was worthy of special note because, to our knowledge, it hasn't been pointed out by anyone else. He was obviously very opposed to the Protestants. In his opinion, they were a sect which was groping in the dark. He published a bull against sodomy. A secular authority named the Lord of Sassuola had allowed two heretics into his territory and was placed in the castle of St. Angelo as a punishment until he had caused both of the heretics to be delivered to the Roman Inquisition. His bull on reverence in churches is spoken about on page 224. It basically says, quote, "The Romans at that time were far from strict in their behavior in church and during the services, and Pius V found himself obliged to order by a bull that which is generally taken for granted among good Christians, namely that they should go to church modestly and reverently, speak in a low voice, pay attention to the services, and always bend the knee before the Blessed Sacrament." End quote. This is particularly relevant because even in a lot of traditionalist churches, you find people shortly after the service talking in the church and not showing reverence to the Blessed Sacrament. It's not good. Pius V was also very devoted to Our Lady and the Rosary. During his reign, there was an interesting miracle with an image of Our Lady, and I'm going to quote it from page 314. "In spite of the wide extent which the Protestant movement seemed likely to attain in Faenza, it was soon evident that even there, as in the rest of Italy, it had taken no real root among the masses of the people. In a great fire which had broken out in the city, an image of the Madonna remained unharmed amid the flames. Everyone saw a miracle in this occurrence, and at once the daily diatribes of the Protestant preachers against the worship of the saints and of their images failed to have any effect." End quote. And when he says worship in this translation, it simply means veneration. True worship or adoration is for God alone. When the heretical Queen Elizabeth continued to persecute the church and spread the Anglican schism, Pius V excommunicated her. And in the Bull of Excommunication, there's a very interesting quote about the necessity of the church. Quote, "The sovereign jurisdiction of the one holy Catholic and apostolic church, outside of which there is no salvation, has been given by him, Jesus Christ, to Peter, Prince of the Apostles." End quote. That's from the Bull excommunicating the heretical Queen Elizabeth, February 25th, 1570. On pages 225 and 226, there's something interesting. It concerns a caste-like tendency which had developed among certain Catholics at the time. The caste system in India is basically a system of segregation which divides the people into different classes, and they are distinguished by their dress, their manner of eating and acting, the people they can associate with, and their higher castes and their lower castes. It's a horrible and evil system based on nonsense, pride, and false religion, and it basically divides the people into different levels of humans, essentially. And there was something going on which was similar among Catholics, not obviously to the same extent, but that sort of tendency, and it's discussed on page 225. Quote, "In the Diocese of Calahorra, a remarkable exhibition of the proverbial Spanish class feeling had led to disturbances and damage, even in the churches. There were two parties, the Hidalgos, who were exempt from taxes, and the Pecheros, who were not thus exempt. The Hidalgos claimed precedence over the others and the first places even in the churches, at Mass, at the reception of the sacraments, and in processions. This gave rise to endless strife and quarrels. Pius V then intervened with all his energy against these exhibitions of an Indian spirit of caste. Quote, he revoked the decision of the civil authorities as inadequate and declared that anyone who claimed a special place in church would incur excommunication." I find that very interesting and refreshing because the civil authority actually had basically cowed to the demands of these two classes, or the higher class, in Spain, and had divided the churches into two. assigning the right half to the Hidalgos and the left to the Pacheros. Pius V stopped all of this. And I also found it interesting because there was a book which I read some time back called Pearl to India about a missionary Jesuit priest named Father Roberto de Nobili, who basically was the first priest to penetrate the interior of India and bring Christianity into India at the time, in the 16th century. But in so doing, he basically had to, in the view of many, compromise a little bit and accept or conform to the caste system. And that was the way that he basically got into the interior of India at that time. There were obviously disputes about exactly whether he was compromising or whether the things that he was doing were allowable. Many people were on different sides of that issue. My opinion was that some of the things he did were not acceptable, but it's refreshing to see that Pius V denounced any sort of division between the people based on a class type of distinction. On page 342, it talks about how Pius V acted against those who had made use of Jewish religious rites. This is obvious and goes without saying, but it's worth mentioning because there are certain, quote, Catholics today, people who think they're Catholics but unfortunately aren't, among the Novus Ordo Church, called the Hebrew Catholics, who claim to have been converted from Judaism but still participate in Jewish rituals. It's also worth noting that Pius V was successful in converting many Jews. This is from page 340. Notwithstanding all of these strict ordinances, Pius V had a certain feeling of kindliness for this unhappy people. Above all, he sought as far as possible to win them to Christianity, nor, as he himself says, were his efforts altogether unsuccessful. Many Jews were baptized. Whenever any of the more eminent among the Roman Jews showed themselves ready for conversion, the Pope performed the sacred rite with his own hands, and in this way many were led to follow their example. At the end of November 1566, the House of Catechumens, built by Paul III, was almost quite full, and about the same time the convent, where recently converted Jewish girls could take the veil, was found to be too small for the numbers that entered, so that the convent had to be transferred to the larger house. Among the more notable Jewish converts mentioned above, whom the Pope baptized with his own hands, the place of honor belongs to the 70-year-old president of the synagogue, Elias, and his three sons. They received the sacrament with great solemnity, in the presence of the cardinals, and a great crowd of people, including many Jews, in St. Peter's on the third day of Pentecost, June 4, 1566. Moved by the great pity, goodness, and holiness which they daily saw in the life of the Pope, in August 1566, 26 Jews and 12 more in October of the same year followed the example of Elias. In each case it was arranged that baptism should be conferred with great solemnity by a cardinal. That's great to hear, obviously. There's also the point about the Calvinist baptisms, which we discussed on e-exchanges, where some were questioning the validity of the baptisms performed by Calvinists because the Calvinists held that baptism did not have the power of taking away original sin. And so certain people believed that they did not have the intention to do what the Church does in baptism. But Pius V approved the decision of the Congregation of the Council, which decided in favor of the validity of the baptisms performed by such Calvinists, on the ground that in spite of their errors as to the effects of baptism and the true Church of Christ, the preachers steadily maintained of doing what the Christian Church had always done in conferring baptism. And that was the position we had held because certain people had written to us and others have written on this topic, saying that the baptisms performed in the Novus Ordo are of questionable validity because frequently the priests who perform the baptisms do not believe in original sin. And another individual had written to us saying that we were wrong, holding that such baptisms by Protestants who rejected or corrupted the true nature and effects of baptism could be valid, and we said that they were wrong, then this confirms that what we were saying was correct. That is not to say that if there's a question of whether baptism was properly administered, that it shouldn't be done conditionally. That's why we have the conditional form of baptism on our website. It's also interesting that it was a surprise that Pius V actually came out of the conclave which elected him. Going in, he was not a strong candidate. It was Cardinal Borromeo, St. Charles Borromeo, who was largely responsible for Pope St. Pius V's election by stirring up support for him. So that's somewhat interesting that one saint was responsible for bringing this great and saintly pope to the chair of Peter, obviously by God's grace.